Accession number 10693.
Rule 2. You were saying you didn't really want to do the Carder because you thought you knew everything. Did you, in fact, learn anything new that was useful?
Nothing specific, really, except how to behave myself better, perhaps.
So you spent a month doing that, and did you then go to your platoon?
Oh, yes, I think I must have done, except for the interference of the small arms school course at Hythe, which was everybody had to do.
How long was that?
Well, I think it was at least 6 weeks. It was far too long, I think. In fact, I don't know how on earth they filled it all in, really. One did an enormous amount of shooting. We were lucky, actually, because being in the experimental brigade, we didn't have the Lewis gun. We had the Bren gun. And we were one of the first people to have a Bren gun. And in those days, there were only two stoppages, as far as I can remember. And one used to see these wretched other fellows who were doing the Lewis gun marching up and down the canal bank, learning their stoppages, and sometimes actually paying one of the instructors sort of extra duty money for teaching them the stoppages. We had all this time. The Bren gun was so easy. And very pleasant to use, really, too. Of course, one did the rifle and the pistol.
So those are the three weapons, were they?
As far as I can remember, those are the three weapons. I happened to be quite a decent shot with a rifle and also with a pistol. And so, really, Hythe was pretty easy for me.
What sort of ranges were you shooting at?
600, I suppose. At the most. I mean, that was the extreme.
Did you have any field firing exercises down there?
Not that I can remember. That was funny too, actually. There's a lot of fun in these courses. And we were very young and very stupid, I suppose. But we had a very pompous chief instructor who later on actually met as a brigade major in China. And he was rather nice then. But he was rather pompous, and we decided to take the mickey out of him once or twice. And on the last parade, I was in the cavalry, what they call the cavalry squad, because they had Bren guns as well, and not Lewis guns. And the cavalry squad came on parade on donkeys, which we'd hired from Folkestone Harbour. It got into the press, unfortunately, because some waiter in the mess, I think, must have spilt the beans. And one or two of the young officers in the squad got quite serious trouble from their units. If my unit paid no attention at all, and I dare say that either they didn't know what had happened or thought it was a bit of a lark and not worth bothering about.
Was it run on a competitive basis, the small arms course?
Yes, it was. To a certain extent. I can remember there was a pistol competition. I certainly can remember because I was in the final of it, dueling. And I was in the final dueling. I can't remember how they did it, but you did obviously fire at each other, but you fired at targets, two of you. And but I can't remember any rifle competitions. There must have been rifle competitions.
What were the targets like? Were they the standard round targets, or did you have
figures? Oh, yes, and snap-shooting targets, too, figure targets as well as round ones. I remember in the pistol competition, you had to walk down a trench and things sort of popped out at you, and you had to be very quick off the mark before they disappeared. That was rather good, I thought. Damn dangerous, too.
Did you have any other pop-up targets or moving targets?
Oh, yes. Yes, certainly you did. But the details I certainly can't remember. And I suppose we probably had falling plates, too. Certainly, I was firing at falling plates when I was commanding a battalion. Went on until I stopped being a regimental officer.
Did you use the Bren gun on the same ranges as the rifle, or were there special
arrangements? I think on the same ranges.
Apart from this chap who was rather pompous, what did you think of the instructors at the...
They were very good. Even though they obviously learnt the thing off by heart and hardly knew what they were saying because it was so automatic, they seemed to make it interesting. We had a chap, actually, I can remember, in my squad, in the cavalry squad, who got on very well with all of us. And I think he was a light infantryman, I'm not sure. But he used to try and make things amusing for us. I can remember one of his great phrases was, Now, gentlemen, neat but not gaudy is what I want, as the devil said when he painted his testicles green. We had a couple of chaps with titles in the squad too. I remember one was the Marquess of Kildare, and was he the Marquess of Kildare then? Yes, he was. Mr. Marquess of Kildare, sir, went on. It sounded very odd, and eventually Kildare. That's it, he became Duke of Leinster, he lives near here. I've seen him once or twice. I said, Lord Kildare will do. And we had Mr. the Honourable Rouse, too. I suppose that goes on at Sandhurst now.
Did you do anything on the Vickers gun at that time?
No. That was at Netheravon. And I never did a course at Netheravon because I was in the anti-tank gun platoon, I suppose. But I have fired a Vickers gun, and I think that was done within the battalion, but I can't remember.
So you did the Carder, then you went on to Pythe, and then...
We had army manoeuvres.
Then you had the army manoeuvres. So you were straight out on manoeuvres as soon as you got your platoon?
Pretty well. Oh, yes, another thing we had that year was the King's Jubilee, Silver Jubilee. We went into camp at Aldershot. Rushmore, I suppose it was. I remember I had a little dog who disappeared there. And we paraded past the king. And I didn't, actually. My job was to help the colonel of the regiment, who by then was General Lewitt. Delisle had retired the year before. And he was awfully blind. And we had to sort of get him on his horse and make sure I point him in the right direction so that he wouldn't bump into the king or disappear into distance. Anyway, that was my job, and I wasn't on the actual... Although I was carrying the colours on the rehearsals, and the chap who did carry one of the colours was on a course, a Netheravon, I suppose, and he came back and he took over. He was senior to me. But so I was really sort of acting as ADC. That was, and I can remember the king riding on to parade with his three sons behind him in khaki uniform. Was it three or four sons? Four, but I'm not sure if the Duke of York was there. Anyway, I think probably all four were wearing their regimental uniforms. And I saw the Troop in colour that year too, in London. And also, one of the very privileged, which a lot of people never got at all, and that was attending a levee at St. James's Palace. Of course, all newly joined regular officers were supposed to attend a levee, but quite often they never got the chance of doing it because they were probably abroad or something like that.
But they would have had a formal invitation?
No, they would have only got an invitation if they had known to be able to go, I think. And the other time you got... had to attend a levee in theory was when you became a field officer, and I suppose when you became a commanding officer, but I don't know. Anyway, seven or eight of us attended a levee at St. James's Palace, which was taken by the Prince of Wales, because the King by then was too ill really to function unless he had to.
What actually happened at the levee?
Well, it was in St. James's Palace. I can remember the night before we had dinner in the mess. It was a band night, and one of my brother officers, rather wild man, was demonstrating rugger tackles after dinner on the mess furniture and did himself absolutely no good at all. well, this put his collarbone out or something like that, I think. And he was one of our party. And my mother had a flat in London at the time, and he felt so awful. We had to stop there and sort of fill him up with whiskey and take the pain away. Well, anyway, and also we were absolutely disgusted because we wore khaki uniform with plus fours and putties. Because the king had complained that the smell of mothballs, apparently, of people who'd had uniforms from moss brass, full dress uniforms, was so oppressive, they preferred them to turn up in their own clothes. And my CO, no, it wasn't, the Colonel Regiment, General Lord, I think, took it very seriously, and all our lot turned up in putties and khaki uniform service dress, with a lot of other regiments in full dress, and mothballs or not, we were rather envious. Well, anyway, you were shoved into a room and sort of filed past. You were led by the colonel of your regiment, and the commanding officer was there as well. And someone read out your name, Second Lieutenant Richard Norman, sir. And you just marched up, turned to the left, bowed, very strict instructions. You mustn't bend your spine at all. You had to just bend your head from the neck. And obviously, the Prince of Wales was bored absolutely to tears by the whole thing. The ADs, the equerries, and kept on saying, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, get moving. And that was it. I was removed straight away and taken off to have my photograph taken. And can't remember what happened the rest of the day. But several people, of course, one knew there, and it was rather nice, and there was lots of lovely, glamorous uniforms. Prince of Wales was wearing the uniform of Colonel Cameron Highlanders, as far as I can remember. And it was very similar to what went on when women used to go to court. But that was always in the evening. This was in the morning.
You mentioned the band night the night before and the rugby. Was it the usual thing to have games after band nights?
No, not really. I think we were a bit above ourselves. That was all. We didn't have noisy band nights or noisy mess affairs at all, really. I think it was just with general high spirits. I think we were a pretty well behaved lot, on the whole. The young ones, well, and the old ones too.
So you went to the battalion cadre, then to Hythe, then there came the levee, and then you went on this exercise. Can you remember what happened when you first met your platoon?
No, I can't. In fact, I can only remember the name of one member of the platoon. I can't remember the name of my platoon sergeant, I don't think. No, I can't remember.
How did you get on with understanding their speech?
I thought it would take ages. I can remember one of the very first band nights I ever attended up in Cattery. It probably was the first. One of the officers sang Blade and Races, and it was absolutely terrific, I thought. But I couldn't understand much of it. And then but afterwards, I certainly could. And now I realise what a lovely accent it is, the Geordie accent, one of the nicest provincial accents, well, the nicest. And sometimes my ex-batmen and people ring up here and they hear this lovely, warm voice talking that gorgeous language. Absolute bliss.
Did it take you any length of time to understand them?
Oh, yes, I think so. Yes, I was born and brought up in the south of England, and the usual sort of southern snobbishness, I think, about it. Everything. We were very intolerant young people in those days. I'm sure I was. I still am, I'm afraid. But one gets to love the Geordies very quickly indeed. They're so frightfully nice. Wonderful manners, too.
Were all your platoon Geordies, or did you have men from other parts of the country as well?
I think my first platoon was all Geordie. When I went out to India, there were one or two occasions. Very odd, in those days, you get one southerner, Londoner as a rule, who would certainly stand out. I can remember my first company sergeant major, a chap called Brown, and he finished out as a major, and he was a regimental secretary. And he was very much a Cockney. And his father had been a soldier, and this chap, Brown, had been brought up at Canterbury, I gather, while his father was doing some military job in Canterbury. But they, in fact, are extraction, and he was a very, very strict Roman Catholic. So I used to taunt him about having to have a bath if he came into Durham Cathedral. And he made a first-class regimental secretary. He was pretty unpopular with the chaps when he was company sergeant major. Always very much a gentleman. I can remember going on leave at Fleet Station, I suppose it was, but I can't remember. And he and I were both wearing bowler hats and stiff collars. Although he travelled third class and I travelled first class. He was a wonderful man, first class. But he didn't like me at all to start with. And in fact, my acting company commander sent for us both one day and tried to sort of knock our heads together. After a bit, we became the greatest friends. And his widow lives not far from here, as a matter of fact. But he was very unusual. He was a man with rarely officer brains. He took over adjutant from me in the war.
Did you find that there were other members of the regiment who took time to accept you and regarded you as an intruder when you first arrived?
Definitely.
Do you think this was worse because you were from the South?
No, it's because I was from the university. Well, I don't think any sort of South-North trouble occurred at all, really. It was just me being young and intolerant and stupid. But, no, I adore the Geordies. I go up every year to see them all.
You mentioned the platoon had no weapons.
My platoon had. We were given a thing called a Solothurn gun, which is a Swiss gun, apparently. We never used it. We never took them out of the boxes. It was just a dummy, really. And these motor cars were just silly. They were something to move about in, but they wouldn't be any use in the war at all. But anyway, I was OC of the anti-tank, the number one anti-tank platoon. I think it might have been number four. In the anti-tank company, there was only one. And we had no proper weapons at all. We never fired the thing. And in fact, we were told not to take them out of their boxes.
How were you supposed to simulate firing them when you went on the manoeuvre?
Flags, as far as, or something like that, I can remember. I remember having a heck of a row with, when I was protecting Wavell's left flank with some invading cavalry force who paid absolutely no attention to us, because we got them in a wonderful ambush, and if I had a proper weapon, I'd have really sorted them out properly. But they paid no attention at all. And I think I got a few marks on the umpire.
Was that a common thing on manoeuvres?
We were pathetic. And there were flags and rattles and things like that. It was awful.
Was it also common that commanders would refuse to accept that they had been defeated or unmanoeuvred?
Only junior ones, I think. And like I could remember, after the war, doing manoeuvres, I was second commander, I think, of the battalion in Germany, and we were fighting the Belgians. The Belgians wouldn't pay any attention to anybody at all. They just surged on regardless. Even a brigadier came out to try and stop them doing it. Didn't have any effect. No, I think in England it's any of the young officers who didn't want to be beaten.
Did you come across any cases of gamesmanship on manoeuvres?
I imagine I probably did, but I can't remember any.
On what sort of basis did you choose your ambush position and your other positions? Were you put into your position by the company commander, or were you No. To cover a piece of ground and select your own position.
Well, in those days, we covered roads. Or road junctions and things, just the ordinary sort of thing. So, last time I did it was on Salisbury Plain when I was commanding our 6th Battalion, and I had a wonderful positions. Absolute death or glory, though, because there was no cover whatsoever. But you'd catch them when they were coming over like that, and you'd be down there, and these tanks, you'd get the tanks just under their bellies. That's the sort of position one looked for.
Halfway down a reverse slope.
That's about it, yes.
Where did you learn to appreciate ground and choose positions?
Well, I don't know. They always used to say that you learn how to do that sort of thing in the hunting field. Well, I'd done jolly little hunting, so that couldn't have caused... I think it's natural instinct, I think, really.
Had you had any formal instruction in the appreciation of ground and tactical exercises without troops?
Oh, yes. One does chutes throughout one's service.
So you met the platoon. How long do you think it was before the platoon had taken you in and incorporated you as a member?
I think fairly soon, because we regarded ourselves as being rather elite, being the anti-tank platoon. And in my case, especially because we had these fast motor cars and we whizzed all over the place in a rather daring fashion. And we thought we knew more about being anti-tank experts than anybody else did, because nobody else had ever tried, practically.
Were there tanks on this manoeuvre?
Oh, yes, as far as I can remember. There must have been, and armoured cars, too. It was a big do in those days. I mean, the press used to attend, not that I can remember them coming anywhere near me, but I think the war correspondents used to come out and watch manoeuvres and take them pretty seriously.
Was it a continuous manoeuvre, or was it done in bursts of 1 or 2 days?
No, it was continuous as far as I can remember. I can remember one after the war at Senelager, where we stopped the whole thing for a day for Shinwell to come and be marched past, which is really rather ridiculous, especially we had a heck of a job getting clean and ready for an inspection after days of mucking about in the area around Senelager.
Were you kept in the picture while this manoeuvre was going on?
Yes, I think we were, because it was Archie Wavell's division. I dare say that had a lot to do with it. And Jumbo Wilson, the brigade commander, too, was a very high-class soldier, I always thought.
Was there a general policy within the battalion of keeping the soldiers in the picture and telling them what was going on?
Within the battalion, I think, certainly there was, in those days.
Do you remember what sort of number of guns you should have had if you'd had them? How many anti-tank guns should there have been in
the platoon? I think 4, probably, in my platoon.
And how many men would there have been handling and serving them?
I suppose 25, I suppose, something like that, 24.
So the idea would be then you'd have a detachment of how many per gun?
About 5.
About 5 men per gun. And then...
Probably 4. Then, of course, you had a driver for each vehicle. Yes, I think 3 or 4 it would be.
And the rest would be ammunition numbers, would they?
Passing. Yes, yes.
Was it the idea that these guns would be towed behind the vehicles if they had been taken?
No, I don't
boxes?
Think they were. There would have been... I can't remember the names of the things, like we used to get at the beginning of the war.
Anti-tank rifles.
Yes, but they had a set of initials or something, as far as I can remember, which you could... I can't remember what they were called. Anyway, they wouldn't have been much good.
What was their notional range for the manoeuvre?
I should think more than about 100 and 200 yards, I think.
Had any of the men in the platoon, to your knowledge, ever fired an anti-tank weapon?
Not at that time. Oh, I should think certainly not.
So all their instruction had been theoretical?
Absolutely, yeah.
What's the next thing you can remember that was important then after this grand manoeuvre?
I can't remember at all, except it must have been not so long. I can't remember what I must have done the rest of that year. But in December, I left for India. So I had a goodish deal of embarkation leave, presumably.
So can we assume then that the rest of the time at Blacktown you were engaged in the normal routine of training?
Yes, it would have been, yes.
Collective training. What was your routine day like when you were at Blacktown? What time was your valet, for example?
I don't know. I should think 7 o'clock. Certainly no later. I can't remember the time of the first parade. I remember occasionally we used to be summoned by the adjutant to ride horses before breakfast, which was rather nice.
Was this for...
This was part of our training. I mean, in those days, you had mounted officers, all company commanders had chargers, and so did the adjutant and the signals officer. I can't remember anybody, and the CO, of course.
So the horse was still a practical means of
transport? Oh, yes. You definitely were supposed to ride a horse, and there were these chargers. I didn't ever actually have to ride a horse on duty the whole of my service, but I had to be prepared to do it. I wore breeches once or twice when I became adjutant, simply because adjutants were supposed to wear breeches for certain duties.
Did you spend most of every day with the platoon? Or were you inclined to let the NCOs get on with some aspect of training on their own?
I think there was a far more emphasis on what the county commander said should be done. Yes, the NCOs did a lot. And of course we did things that the NCOs didn't do, like we had to be trained in accounting and things like that, which I always found frightfully difficult and very unpleasant too. For years I was education officer and had to supervise battalion education, which was a very boring business too. Some time after, when I went to the 2nd Battalion in India, I was education officer for several years. And until I was sent home all the way from Shanghai to do an education course at Shorncliffe, at the same time also to take my written promotion exam. After having done the education course, I never did education officer again.